Hi, this is Scott Delosio. This is Parathotal Speedway podcast number 5 for the 2017 season. And the driver we're going to talk to today, you can see this Saturday night, that's March 11th, when the Pats host the 22nd season opener for the Pats Car Stock Cars along with the IMCA Modified. And the driver we're talking to won the IMCA Modified Championship last year at Parathotal Speedway, and that's Chuck Becker. Chuck, good to talk to you. Are you all ready for this Saturday night?
Yeah, we've been ready to go all winter long, but unfortunately we've had some rain this year.
Yeah, you guys are supposed to run, we had a 5-race series scheduled for the winter to start in December. We got the first race in. The other 4 got rained out, but the weather looks spectacular for this weekend. I mean, it's beautiful weather today and just getting better as the weekend comes along. Let's go back and talk about your championship last year. Let's go back and do some family stuff first. The history of the family, the Becker family, goes back forever, it seems, in Southern California racing. Who started? When did it begin? Where did it begin?
You know, it started in the mid-40s with my grandpa. That was Chuck Sr. Now, I don't know all the places he raced, but he was running jalopies, and I know he ran midgets. What was midgets and sprint cars at that time? What they called modifieds, which were basically like Model Ts. And stuff like that all over, you know, California and wherever he decided to go. And from there, it went to the 60s, on, you know, fast forward to the 60s, where my dad, being the oldest brother, which is Chuck Jr., started racing pretty much the same type cars and all that, and then turned into stock cars at the Orange Show, which kind of gained momentum and went all over California, Arizona. And, you know, it even took him to Daytona at one point. And then I got a couple uncles, Rick, who has pretty much done, you know, he's done really well over his career, all over everywhere on the western side of the United States. And then my Uncle Randy as well. And, shoot, I've got, 5 different cousins that have raced. 2 of my kids that have raced. So it's pretty much been a large amount of my family has raced all over California, Arizona, Washington, Oregon, and pretty much, you know, anywhere in between.
You said you had 2 of your kids have raced. Which 2? I know of Brandon, who started racing with us a couple of years ago in the Modifieds. Which other son raced?
Well, I actually have 4 sons. I have Brian is the oldest. He actually raced what we call Pro Fours. Probably 10 years ago at the Orange Show, he took one of my old cars and bought it from me. And he raced the Pro Fours for a season, but he didn't really like it. I mean, he did okay, but he didn't really like it that much driving as much as he does working on them. He kind of turned into he'd rather be a mechanic than drive it. Then I have Brett and Bryce, and Bryce wants to race, and he loves the sprint cars. But the deal I have with all my kids, and it's all the same for all of them, is they have to have a job, they have to buy their own car, and I will help them to the best of my ability once they have that car. So it's you got to put forth the effort before you get to go do it.
And you've been racing. Brandon's been out there. I think this will be his second full season. He's driving a car because he's a San Bernardino County Sheriff. How does he like racing? What's it like to race against your son?
He wasn't interested in the asphalt racing at all, which is what we were doing for a long time. I ran my first 10 years on dirt, anything from stock cars, wedge cars, sprint cars, back and forth, and then I went to asphalt for 25 years. He didn't want anything to do with the asphalt. He didn't even go watch. It was boring to him. When I started running the modified a couple of years ago, he came out and watched one night. He said, "You know, Dad, I think I like that. I want to get me one of those." Okay, we can do that. I got with Randy Thornell, and he had an old car and wanted to build a new one. So we bought his son's car from him, and his son, Blake, got his car, and he built a new car for himself. As far as Brandon is going to be really fast, and he puts down some really good laps, you know, quite often, but he really hasn't, what he's learning to do is he's got to learn to put a full race together. And when he does that, I don't have any doubt in my mind that he's going to win a lot of races. But he's got to get to that first.
Do you enjoy competing against him?
That's a yes and no. I do enjoy competing against him, and it does take my mind off of worrying about him so much because I usually have my own hands full. Watching him race is really difficult for me because you got that whole parent factor where you worry about him, but at the same time you want him to do well, and you're trying to figure out what you can do to help them and, you know, help them make everything go better and smoother. Racing against him, the competitive part comes out. My ideal thing for Brandon would be to finish second to him for his first win. But by no means will I give it to him.
You just talked, you raced 25 years on pavement, 10 years before that on dirt. Some of my questions later in this interview were going to pertain to some of that stuff, but how long have you actually been racing now?
I ran my first race when I was 15 in 1979 in a stock car at Corona Raceway. I've quit a few times because it's frustrating. Sometimes it gets expensive. Sometimes we go through different things in life where we just can't really put the time into it or afford it. So it's kind of been hit and miss for the better part of, let's see, that's 38 years.
That's a pretty long career. How much dirt? You said you raced 10 years on dirt. You also said you raced a sprint car. I never knew that. I know your father raced a sprint car. In fact, if I remember right, he bought the car from Jay East. Is that the same sprint car you drove?
No, that is not. The sprint car that I actually drove was the second car that Bubby and Davy Jones built, and it actually had it welded into the frame. It said BJ2 for Bubby Jones 2. And I saw a picture on Facebook not that long ago. It was actually showing Davy and Bubby building that chassis when they were building it, and it was in like 1984 or 5. And I started racing the 86 season. My first race was at El Centro, actually the El Centro weekend, and ran a couple after that. But what happened was it kind of sprint cars and my mother and my stepmother at the time, it was a big conflict. And they didn't really like it, so then I went off back to doing my own thing with the wedge cars. So it was short-lived, but it was a lot of fun.
So you were around sprint cars. You said Davy Jones. And you've been a longtime friend of Davy Jones. I didn't know you had that much to do with sprint cars. I mean, my association, you know, before a couple of years ago of you with sprint cars was just thinking that your dad got in one. I guess that was in the mid-'80s as well. But you knew Davy Jones for years. We had another mutual friend who's been around open wheel racing for years who unfortunately passed away, Russell Bliss. So you had been exposed to open wheel racing for a long time, correct?
Sprint cars are my favorite cars in the entire world, and if I healed quicker at this point in my life with the finances and stuff, that's where I would be racing. But unfortunately, as time goes and we get older and all that, our bodies don't heal as quick. And, you know, once those things start bouncing, it's kind of like a super ball in a racquetball court. And, you know, it's just a younger man's fat car, and that's just the reality of it. But I love sprint car racing. You know, and in the old days, it was like you go to a race, whether you're racing or not, and there was the little crowd, which was, you know, Bubby Jones, Dean Thompson, Jimmy Seals, Jimmy Oskey, some of those guys, and you didn't talk to them. You didn't go on the track near them. You didn't approach them. They were in a whole other level of competing, and then there was all the rest of us. So it's actually pretty funny. And you can ask Ricky Gaunt that same question because he and I talked about it last year and when he was getting ready to quit, and we were talking about those days. So, you know, yeah, I've been around it, and I love sprint cars. Absolutely love them.
You mentioned the old days just a few minutes ago. And back to the old days when you guys were racing your stock cars and that. It's a whole lot different nowadays, isn't it? The safety factor, I mean, from fire suits, it's just what people even got in the race cars, what the safety factors in the race cars were back then. It's a whole different ballgame now, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Everything about, you know, stock car racing isn't really stock car racing anymore. The safety aspects of it, I appreciate because now you actually can strap into a car, and there's always the element of danger, but you don't really think about it, and you go in as safe as what you can be. My biggest fear ever is fire, so I take extra precaution on that. Other than that, I still feel like I'm invincible most of the time, but fire kind of makes me a little nervous, and every driver has their little perks or quirks or, you know, whatever you want to call them. But yeah, racing is a lot different now than it used to be.
Have you ever had to deal with fire in a race car?
I have not actually myself, other than one time at the Orange Hill. I blew an engine, and it's actually kind of funny because I won't say the exact words that went down, but I blew an engine going into turn three, and at that time, the safety crew and all them, they were in the infield when the infield used to be dirt. And the car caught on fire, and I was spinning because when you get into your own oil, the car pretty much goes out of control, and I made it to the infield, and the cars were all crashing that were behind me and doing all kinds of stuff, and the safety guy comes running over, and he's yelling at me, get out of the car because it's on fire, and I'm yelling at him, get in the car because these assholes are still, these guys are still crashing, so jump in the car. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. It's racing. I think we've all heard that around the pits and over the microphones a few times. So talking about the old days in racing, and my dad used to go to Orange Hill. That's after we moved from Michigan to California in the 70s. And he loved Orange Hill. And I liked Orange Hill, too, but I was more of a midget-type track. Orange Hill was a rough-and-tumble place. I mean, if you didn't get in a fight in the Orange Hill at least once a year, you weren't really racing.
Yes.
Talk about that Becker-Scheidecker rivalry back in the day. My dad would come home, and them Beckers and them Scheideckers, man, they went at it. You should have seen them. That was like part of the show.
You know, there was a lot more than that. Actually, the Beckers with the Scheideckers is kind of funny because my oldest son, Brian, is married to a Scheidecker at this point in life. But really didn't have a whole lot of issues with the Scheideckers so much because we were always friends with them. But what's even funnier is, like, in especially the older days, my dad, my Uncle Randy, they were the honorary ones, especially in fact, that and my grandfather. But in those days, you could go and you could get into it with another driver or get in a fight at the Orange Hill or whatever, and it was pretty much over and done with until the next week, and you go do it again. One of the big rivalries was my dad and Ivan Baldwin, who was huge in stock car racing in the 70s and 80s, and he still had a huge input into a lot of the guys now, which are in cup racing. But everybody thought they were these, you know, they hated each other, they didn't do this, didn't do that, but what people didn't see was when they would go and crash and then get in a fight after the race the next day or the whole next week working on each other's cars so they could go do it again the next week. They're best friends.
That's pretty cool.
I wish it was that way these days.
Yeah. Well, if you were there Saturday night, we had tag team going at the end of the main event. We'll talk about that later, though.
Okay.
You told me a great funny story one time last year about your dad and George Esau getting into it. I think it was George Esau, correct?
Yes, it was George Esau. There's Larry and Ronnie, but George was their dad. And my dad were racing at the Orange Show. And they got into it on the racetrack. They got off the racetrack, and my dad punched George Esau. Okay. You know, typical Saturday night at the Orange Show, no big thing. Well, my dad got his letter that said he was suspended until he paid a $500 fine. That $500 fine, the following week, he took his letter with him, and at that time it was either 10 or 15 bucks to get into the pits, to, you know, for your pit pass. So he said, okay, so I owe $515 to get in, right? They said, yes. So he wrote his check out for $1,015, which was, you know, $500 more, and George Esau was right behind him in the pit pass line. He turned around, he punched him again.
Just pay in advance.
Yes, paying in advance.
Let's go back to the modern day. When did you first start racing at Paris Auto Speedway?
Oh, 2 years ago. 2 years ago was my first time ever being on the racetrack.
Why did you come back onto a dirt track, and why in a modified?
Because asphalt racing to me is gotten to where you can go as fast as what you want to spend. And I've done it for so long, and, you know, I've been pretty successful at it. And it just wasn't fun anymore. I didn't have any fun. Well, one of my younger cousins, Ryan, had accumulated a couple modifieds. And he called me up and he said, hey, you want to drive this car for me? Because he had two of them. I said, sure, I'll drive it. No problem. Sounds like fun. Well, at the time, when we were talking, I also had a Harley. And I didn't like riding the Harley. I mean, you go down the road, you worry about somebody backing out of a driveway or running a red light, and you don't get a second chance on a Harley. He said, well, why don't you just trade me that Harley for the modified? Then if it breaks and you got to fix it, at least you're fixing your own stuff. So I did. And that was a 2006 Shaw, and it's still sitting in my backyard. I ran it for the first year and a half, and these four-bar cars are crazy trying to learn them. Everything that I ever thought I knew is backwards. Every adjustment that I ever made, I've got to the point now where when I decide to make an adjustment, I do exactly the opposite, and that's what works. And then I ended up coming across a pretty good deal last year and buying a new chassis from a guy that had it for five races and decided he didn't like it. So I bought that, switched all my parts over, and here we are.
So 2 years into coming back to dirt after 25 years of being away from dirt, you win the IMCA Modified Championship of Parasol Speedway. Was that surprising to you that after being up dirt so long, you could win a championship so fast?
It was absolutely a huge surprise. And I kind of kicked myself in the butt for it, too, because I made some mistakes along the way. You know, we're talking about Davy Jones. It's funny because I actually had a phone call with him the other day, and it was he asked me if I was done with that crap yet. That's not the words. If anybody knows Davy Jones, that's not how he talks. It's much more trucker-esque. But
yes.
He said, are you done with that now? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, that points racing stuff. You know, he's right. Usually whenever I've gone to a racetrack, I've gone to a racetrack to win, and I found myself chasing points, which when you get in the middle of a points battle or you get, you know, close to the end of the season and you got a shot, you don't take quite as many chances, or you start racing to finish, you know, reasonable rather than race harder to finish better. And I did start doing that towards the end of last year, and I didn't like it.
So does that mean this year you're really not so worried about defending your championship? You're more out there to grab the wins?
Well, I can tell you a couple things on that. Yes, I plan on running as hard as I can. I don't really agree with the way that the IMCA portion is one thing, but the way that the fast car championship goes down to where it puts it down on one race for everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what's next, running in stages? No.
Well, no, we are doing stages this year.
Yeah, green, white, checkered.
Exactly.
But, you know, I can tell you this. I finally, for the first time of the season, got to start reasonably good. And Mike Kirby started on the pole. I started on the outside. And I went as hard as I could possibly go. And to watch him and his car go do the things he was doing, it irritated me. It actually made me mad. It's like, okay, what do I got to do to run like that? So at this point, I'm getting in better shape. I've been in the gym. I want to run harder, and I want to be able to run faster over the course of the entire race, because that sucked getting beat like that.
So you think that is all that makes Mike Kirby that good?
No, I think Mike Kirby has about a million laps everywhere he goes. I think Mike Kirby's one of the best race car drivers I've ever met. But to watch the focus that man puts into a car, and guys like him, I've seen my Uncle Rick and my dad do the same thing. And it's a mental state that you got to be able to put yourself into. And the focus that you have every single lap, every single foot on that racetrack to be able to do that. And when you start racing for points rather than racing hard every lap, you get away from that a little bit. I'm not going to make that mistake again without the effort of doing it right.
You know, when you talk about Mike Kirby and you talk about Paris Auto Speedway, just so people don't know this guy, Mike Kirby, he's won in more different types of cars than anybody in the 22-year history of the track. Now, he's won in sprint cars, won in elite models, he's won in modifieds, he's won in street stocks, he's won in figure eight cars. He's just a natural, and like you say, he's got more laps on that track, I think, than anybody ever has. And that helps a lot.
That helps a lot, but the focus that the man has, I understand that because there's been at times in my career that I've had that focus where I could get to, you know, I still go to a racetrack wanting to win. That's, if you go to a racetrack for any reason other than wanting to win, you have no business being there. But when he straps into a car, it's something that's very rare. And I've seen it. I've seen it and I've been there. Not as often as him or, you know, other people, but it is pretty remarkable to watch. And I know when I was on the outside of him, I could see his eyes because I was watching where he was going because it was still early in the race. And you can't win a race on the first lap, but you can damn sure lose one. And I wasn't going to do that, but I completely lost where I was on, out on the racetrack that night. And that guy, he's just amazing. So,
well, let's go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to go back. One of the legendary drivers in West Coast racing over the past 40 years has been Rick Becker, your uncle. You had him in a car at the end of last year. What are the chances we see him back in a race car this year?
You know, I told him, Randy Thornell told him, he's welcome to drive our cars anytime that he wants. I told him he could have my old Shaw, and I've got almost all the parts to put it together. And you know, he's 60 years old now. He's got a lot of other stuff going on. So if he decides to come out and race, then so be it. But I highly doubt that he'll come race on a regular basis because it's the same thing with him. If he can't race and race to win, he really doesn't want to race. You know, he doesn't want to go out and just drive. He's been there, he's done that, and he wants to do it right, or he doesn't want to do it at all. It was actually fun for me because I got to pass him a couple times. So
not many people have done that.
Not many people have, you know. I mean, it takes a good night to be able to go by him when he was on his game. That's for sure.
You were talking about working out, getting back into shape for this year. You've got to battle something a lot of other drivers do not have to battle when they're on a racetrack. You're affected with asthma at times. How often do you
have
to play?
It's funny that you ask because, believe it or not, I have what is called GERD. It's a I can't even say the word. But what it is like an acid reflux thing that comes up and it causes a tickle in my throat. When that tickle comes, it starts to cough. And it's like a whole relay thing that goes, the more I cough, the drier and more irritated my throat gets. As it gets more irritated, it just steamrolls and it actually can turn to pneumonia. I actually battled it last year during the winter series. And believe it or not, what has happened and made it go better is I take a Nexium every day, and I haven't had a problem with it now since that winter series last year.
So that's the trick. That's one of the tricks of going faster, right? Everybody heard that before you rushed out to the store.
I'm hoping. Well, believe it or not, breathing in a race car is something that a lot of people don't pay attention to. I bought a new helmet 2 years ago, and I gave that helmet away because it was too close to my face. And what happens when you're breathing in a race car, if the helmet's too close to your face, you're breathing bad air. You're not getting fresh oxygen. And that can cause a fatigue factor. And after 7 or 8 laps of going hard, believe it or not, it does wear you out.
Wow. You're also saying, like, the asthma effect and all that. What about with the dust in that? That cannot help on a racetrack.
No, it doesn't. But if you, like I said, I wear a head sock. you know, for not only for the fire protection, but that actually does help with the dust. A couple other people I know wear head socks, but they have like the Parker Pumper helmet to pump air in. And I've actually thought about doing that too, but I don't like the extra weight.
Of course, you're a racer.
I don't like it. I don't like the weight on my helmet, you know, from, you know, smacking it around back and forth. So,
any injuries sustained in your racing career?
Not in racing, no. I've been very fortunate. I've had my bell rung a couple times, but real injuries to speak of, no.
What's going to be different? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just thinking, no, I've really not had any real injuries. I've been very, very lucky. So,
what's going to be different about your program, if anything, for this year? Any sponsors on board or any old sponsors? You need to get those guys in, too.
Well, Lucas Oil just came on. So we, you know, it's a product sponsor, but heck, it all adds up. And I really got the same ones. I've got Carpet Station, Huss Trucking, K&N Filters, Edmore Driveline, you know, Shelly at PRE 2.0. Randy Thornell does all my engines. A1 Graphics. Mike Goldfuss does my shocks. And then Lauren at DJ Safety always is getting after me for not being safe enough. So, you know, it's pretty much the same people. And then I have CJ Evans. Helps me with fabrication and stuff. Ray Estrada helps me with fabrication and bodywork and all that stuff. So I'm actually very fortunate that with the people that I have that help me.
How much time do you put in on the race car during the nights or during the week, I should say?
During the race season, pending what happens the week before, or are you just meaning like an average week of prep?
Just an average week of prep coming up to a race.
I would say about 3 hours a night for three nights.
That's not too bad.
It's really not too bad once it all gets started and rolling. But it's, you know, checking nuts and bolts, looking for fatigue, checking the frame, mostly going over it with a fine tooth comb just to make sure that everything is still intact and in place and hasn't vibrated loose, and, you know, greasing stuff, and, you know, just that the general maintenance stuff is the big thing. So,
and
you know,
not,
we
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Keep on talking.
It's mostly just, you know, like do engine stuff one night, oil, stuff like that, go through engine, transmission, the drivetrain, and then go through nuts and bolts, you know, all the way through. Then you want to get the cars up and get all the weight off the springs and shocks and check all that stuff out and make sure that everything is still moving free and nothing's got bent. But it does take some time, and it's doubled the time now because we got two cars.
Does Brandon come in and help you a lot, or mostly on you?
Absolutely, Brandon helps. If he doesn't help, he doesn't, you know, then it's on him.
You guys have him stopped, right?
We did. We're very fortunate, and just moved into a new house last August, and the new shop is up. We haven't got any electricity to it yet, but we got just built a 1,200-foot shop. It's 14 feet high, so we'll be able to put a lift in. It's still a work in progress, but, you know, it's one of those things with money, time, you know, all that stuff, but it is getting there. And that is going to be a first for me because the last couple of years with two cars, we've been, one car sits in the enclosed trailer to stay out of the weather. The other car is in the garage. You work your butt off on one car, and then you switch them.
You said you moved into your house. You still out in Yucaipa?
I am in Calamasa now, but I'm only about 2 miles from where I was before.
And for people who don't know where that is, it's really a cool place, Southern California, because you're right by Cherry Valley and Oak Glen.
Yes, I'm 5 miles from both.
Let's talk about some of the other racing endeavors this year. I know you were venturing out to some of the racetracks last year, as well as running at Parasol Speedway for the championship. You're going to be running some other tracks this year as well?
Oh, yeah. I actually just was able to buy a quick change from Stephen Fangmeyer. And so I haven't put it in yet because I've been collecting the parts, the bird cages and different things like that. But we're going to, if the car survives this coming week at Paris, we're going to go to Ventura the next week because my mom and girlfriend like to go walk on the beach. And, you know, it's just a beautiful facility. And it's a different kind of place where you can learn a lot of stuff that you can adapt to Paris. And last year we went to Verona and down in San Diego. And, you know, going to some of the other tracks, you can learn a lot. And, you know, bring it all back home. So when you're here, you can, you know, it helps. It helps with driving. It helps with style. It helps with, you know, the different things you can do to a car to make it react different. And, boy, these cars are something I've never dealt with before. So
it's a real race car, too. It's not a street stock. It's a real race car where, when I say that, it's a real race car chassis. You have to learn that thing like the back of your hand.
Yes. Yes. And you can definitely feel the thing when it does something different, you can feel it. And then it's like, okay, we got to start looking because there's something wrong. But these things are, you drive them kind of like a sprint car, but they're full on, full race, big engine, you know, machines that they can bite you too, you know, pretty quick too. The one thing that I would really like to try at some point was because we're all on the same tire, which is a cost-effective thing that IMCA puts in. If we were to bolt really good tires on this thing, I would love to see how fast it would go.
Right. That would be very interesting. For anybody who might be listening from out of town, we got to backtrack a second. You mentioned the Ventura Raceway and your wife. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Your mom and your girlfriend walking out of the beach. Well, I could have got you in trouble right there. Anybody who doesn't know, never been to the Ventura Raceway, you have got to go there one time. The ocean, the beach, actually butts up against the pits. It's an amazing little place.
Yes.
And there's a lot of cool restaurants. If you want to stay nearby, there's hotels within walking distance of the racetrack. And the racetrack's pretty darn cool.
It is. It's very racy. I mean, when you go there, you take a deep breath when the green flag waves, and you don't exhale until either the yellow or the checkered flag come out, because if you do, you're at the back.
It's a tough.
Yeah. It is really tough. Really tough.
Let's get into some fun things about you as we get ready to wrap this thing up. What do you do when you're away from the racetrack?
work. My downtime, my relaxed time, I go to the river. I have a boat that's down at the river. It's an older one, a 95 Carrera, but it's an open bout, and I enjoy water skiing, and that's my goal every year on my birthday, is to get up on that damn ski, which is coming up in April here, so I gotta be in shape for that, too, because getting up on a ski at my age is not an easy task anymore.
What is your age? If you don't mind.
I will be 53 in April.
Oh, you're a youngster.
I know, but it hurts sometimes.
What do you do for a living?
I drive a truck for Waxy Sanitary Supply. I'm home every night, but getting out, I start at 4:30 in the morning and gone until I get done, then come home.
Weren't you on some TV commercial a few years ago, or am I dreaming?
I if you went on the Waxy Sanitary Supply thing, I am on their commercial, yes.
Okay.
It was pretty funny because they had another guy that was going to do it, and when I got there, the guy was having a hard time, and I didn't know anything of what to say or anything. They said, hey, you want to do this? Sure, no problem. And then as soon as we got done, they said, here, sign this paper so you don't charge us for any of this.
Sounds like a racing job.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Work real hard, but don't get paid.
Exactly. Last few questions, the real fun ones. Start off, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
And you've got a new dog, correct? Not that long ago?
You know what? No, we had to get rid of her. We did get a dog, but we had to get rid of her. Because I don't believe in keeping dogs kenneled up or chained up or anything. And our backyard is really large. Well, we park our trucks out there, and my son has a GMC 2500 diesel, and I have a Ford F-150, you know, the V6 model, newer truck. His is actually brand new. Mine's newer or newish, but the dog actually chewed all the brake lines and wiring out from underneath them, the trucks, when they were parked out there. And yeah, so I was just better off to send, you know, take her back to get her a good home rather than kennel her up. We had those two options.
Right. So, man, that's crazy. I've never heard of that before.
I hadn't either, but man, it was not cheap, it was not easy, and it was not fun fixing them.
Back to our questions. Hockey, football, or baseball?
Football, playoff hockey, and I don't even bother with baseball if I want to take a nap.
When you want to get away, I know you already said the river. Desert or ocean?
Oh, desert.
And last question we have for you today, Mexican or Italian?
Depends on the eye color.
There you go. I guess so you threw that in there, so me slipping up on the wife question can't be too bad, huh?
Well, you do know that Hispanics, when they have light-colored eyes, why that happened, right?
I never heard that.
It happened because sailors from Europe were coming over and getting together with Hispanic ladies, and when they were breeding, their eyes turned lighter.
Never heard that one. That's pretty good.
Thanks, Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, well, what, I said Mexican or Italian. I was talking about food, though.
Food? Oh, I thought you were talking about girls. Okay, Mexican, Italian? Oh, definitely Mexican.
All right.
We have tacos at least three nights a week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm Italian. I grew up homemade Italian food. Everything made homemade. I make it all homemade myself, but I don't know what I like better. It's hard to beat a good taco when it comes to putting something down to eat.
Oh, yeah, it's my favorite. And you can ask Eileen at some point. We were talking about what do we want, you know, for food here.
I don't know.
I have
to listen to this podcast. You may not be talking to Eileen.
She's a good sport. But she'll tell you what I told her for our menu is. Tuesdays we have tacos. Wednesdays we have beef tacos Tuesday. Wednesdays we have chicken tacos. Thursdays we have beef tacos. Fridays we have pizza. Saturday, you know, depends on race day or whatever, but, you know, enchiladas maybe. Sunday, we have usually carne asada or something of the sort. Monday, depends on if it's football season or not. And then Tuesday, repeat the menu.
Tell you what, tell me when the house next door to you goes up for sale. I'll be over for dinner every night.
Believe it or not, people do show up. I mean, it's funny, but yes, she's a great cook, and we have a lot of fun with it.
Well, fans, you just heard from one of the nicest guys you'll ever see compete at Parasol Speedway, Chuck Becker, the 2016 IMCA Pass Modified Champion. You can see him this Saturday. Gates are going to open at 5. First race is going to be at 7, along with the IMCA Modifieds, the Pass Car Super Stocks, a class that, like the Modifieds, is growing, the Pass Car Street Stocks, and the American Factory Stocks. You can get advanced tickets by calling 1-800-595-4849. I'm going to tell you that number one more time. It's 1-800-595-4849. And if you do not want to buy advanced tickets, we'll have plenty of tickets for everybody at the ticket window on Saturday night. Chuck Becker, a pleasure to talk to you today, and really looking forward to seeing you race this coming Saturday night.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anytime.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. Yeah.